It is a beautiful Monday morning.
Absolutely sensational.
I like him. He's aggressive. He gets in there.
But I do have one more point about Liverpool, though.
Honestly.
Absolutely stunningly beautiful.
Kolasinac. Oh, geez.
An absolute beautiful goal.
Welcome to the Trademate Sports Podcast. Hi guys, this is Alex and welcome to a special edition of the Trademate Sports Podcast where I interview professional sports bettor and Trademate Sports co-founder Jonas Jelstad. For those who don't know Jonas, he became famous around 2016-2017 when we released a video documentary series on YouTube about how he took his starting bankroll of £10,000 to £1 million in 1 year, simply by value betting and using the same kind of sports betting principles that the Trademate Sports software offers. If you haven't seen the documentary series yet, go and check it out on our YouTube channel because a lot of what we talk about is from those videos. But that's all from me and enjoy the podcast.
So we are here today with the one and only Jonas Jelstad.
And the one and only Alex, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, mate, we haven't seen you for a while since your infamous YouTube series of going from 10K to a million pounds, euros, US dollars?
Pounds, I think it was, equal to.
Yeah. So, thought we'd catch up.
Yeah, I'm excited to tell you about the 1 million to 1 billion story.
Yeah, I know, mate.
Just going to need a bit more time.
So, if we can start basically from 2016 when the videos came out, what happened after you went from 10K to a million US dollars or pounds? Pounds.
So, what happened afterwards? Not too much, just continued in the same stretch. Felt like I was running a bit bad. I don't know, maybe I wasn't good enough, but who knows. I was basically breaking even overall. I also saw I didn't spend enough time analyzing what I was doing right or wrong, what was working. I think I was staking a bit more than I should on American sports. And I saw my profits just came from soccer. If I just stayed with soccer, that's something I was doing 4% over lifetime, and it's been doing very well on. But I was taking a bit more than I should on NFL. Started getting a bit drained because that year I was waking up 9 o'clock every Saturday, 8 o'clock every Sunday, going to bed 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. on so wake up 9 o'clock Saturday, go to bed 2 a.m. wake up 8 a.m. on Sunday, go to bed at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and just being at my computer all the time. So it was very draining, and I feel like my social life kind of disappeared a bit.
Yeah.
So I feel like in order to be at the top, I needed to put in too much work in a way, and that was just the weekends, and then it's work during the week also.
Yeah.
So what I kind of did was I tried to figure out, is there a way I can teach others what I was doing and replicate the same kind of success? Didn't go exactly too good. And I started mixing and tricksing with some automation, and it was just, it was working. It started very well. I made another million with that and then lost half of it back maybe. But and now I just stopped it for a couple of weeks ago just to go over and look at what's actually working, what's not, where should my focus be, is it something changing, because I didn't spend enough time analyzing. And so it's been a lot of focus on that, and with the automation going on, I've been spending time playing poker. 2019 worked out pretty well for me in poker. 2018 was decent also. But I also done many things that I wish I did different in terms of investing in other companies, investing in maybe the wrong people, and being too generous with borrowing money to people who I think had more money, and kind of burnt some bridges there in a way. Liquidity could have been a lot better than what it is right now if I didn't do those stupid mistakes.
Yeah, well, I mean, in 1 year, you went from $10,000 to $1 million. I mean, you're going to, you're going to learn so many lessons the next year after that.
Of course. And, I mean, it sounds like I went broke, which is not the case. It's just I also need to figure out, priorities and what I should actually be focusing on. And I think the year where everything went just like as good as it could go, like it was just like, it's first of all, when you start to master something and things start to go well, you just kind of keeps on pushing. And then when you hit like that bump and things is not going that well, you start to feel like how draining it is.
Yeah.
Like committing all that time, sacrificing all your social life in weekends.
Yeah.
Like I asked myself, why should I do this? Why should I continue doing this? So I like put some money aside for real estate, safe and boring, but you know, it pays pays off. And taking less of the high risk investments.
Yeah. Cause I did notice that in some of the videos was that you were saying like, people were basically saying, although I think the interviewer asked you like, do you feel like you're lucky or whatever? And you're like, well, not really. Like I worked very hard for this. And, it sounds like it was, it got a bit draining in the end that you worked so hard.
Yeah. I mean, draining in a way, like at that point, I think it was all about building up enough capital to kind of do some investments and not care that much about how much you have liquid as long as you're properly invested. And it kind of gets to a point where you're just like, do you really want to grind out and sacrifice all of your life just to get a bit more? Like in one point, like you started, or at least I did, like didn't feel the motivation, the happiness that I had from it when I started. So I kind of started prioritizing a bit other things. And right now, yes, I got some other projects that I'm working on also. And I feel like whenever you start something new, you always, or at least for me, it's just the excitement seeing how you can start from the bottom and then just like work your way up and understand more and more of something. That's what really was appealing to me. And as like what I've done with poker and betting is kind of self-taught. It's always also fun, like now, like when you start to network, you meet people from different industries and you start to think, oh, maybe this is something interesting for me.
Yeah.
So we'll see how the next venture goes.
So yeah, like you're obviously saying that you had like quite a, you obviously had quite a successful year in your first year, the video, the documentary. Like how much do you think you overachieved and above your like expected value?
It's hard to say, like I don't remember exactly my return for every bet that year, but I remember I checked like from, I think it was October to January, like I just started increasing my bet size and everything was just going so smooth and I was running at 9% or close to 10%.
Which is very good.
Across all sports.
Yeah.
And I think realistically speaking, maybe my return would have been closer to 2-3%. I don't know, like I don't know if whatever I did that time was like really good or and I got in at the best prices at everything, but realistically speaking I think 2-3% would have been more like expected return. So of course a lot, and those money was more crucial in terms of like getting getting a proper bankroll and can take risk with other things also. And it's like I did some investments outside of sports betting also, which also was going very well. So it's kind of like everything I touched just turned to gold. And whenever you're in a steam like that, it's hard to kind of figure out what's reality and what's not. So I think like after that, when I started just hitting the, like I had like a downswing, I don't know how much I lost in total, but like I think I earned about $2 million in 4 or 5 months in all the investments combined. And then I think I dropped like $700-800K back because it was just like taking whatever I could think of being good. It was like I just didn't put money in it and it turned out to be good. So obviously running above EV, maybe I did some investments that wasn't plus EV that also paid off. And later it's just been the opposite. Like maybe I've been, should have been running at 3% also, and I've been running at like for like 2 years period, maybe I've been running at like 0.5% or 0.2% or something. So it's just like breaking even over a long stretch. So for that reason, like I just decided, okay, I need to do a change in order to like get to something, get to some place that I can also continuously doing and not being the one who has to put in and sacrifice all of my weekends in order to get any result out of it.
Can you talk a bit, like explain to everyone what it feels like? Because I personally, like anyone that's seen my video series, me going from 1,000 to 2K, and I've made a bit since, like I think I get a bit excited. I'm like, oh, look at all this profit coming in. But I couldn't imagine your situation, like going from 10,000 to 1,000,000. Like, can you explain like how that felt internally? Like, you seem like you're very composed and you look at everything like statistically and analytically, but like surely like there's a bit of emotion in you that's like, this is amazing. Like,
of course, like $1,000,000 is a lot of money.
Mm.
I think, however, like my goal with poker and sports betting was enough to make enough money so you can invest them and have passive income to be set for life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm still in my 20s and I think it's, I had a goal to be, before I get to the 30s, was to be financially independent and have invested in, have some high risk investments in companies, have some safe investments in real estate. And of course, the crypto, the Bitcoin, the pension fund. No, so I went in at, in crypto also, probably worst time ever. At least I timed it 1 week better than peak. So I got in when Bitcoin was about 14K.
Mm.
The stupid thing was that I invested a bit in altcoins also. So I lost a bit or decent amount there. But I'm still holding on to my Bitcoins. And now that the Bitcoin hype is over, I really believe that Bitcoin is going to come back up again. Okay. So I'm like, to this day now, I'm still actively buying Bitcoins.
Yeah.
So I think Bitcoins is actually a really good investment at the price now.
Okay.
So, but I mean, it's high risk. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend anyone putting a high percentage of their net worth in it unless.
Yeah. So when did you first invest in that?
So January, was it 2018?
Yep.
I think like just that Christmas where it peaked 20K. And then I was like, okay, I'm waiting for it to drop. And when it drops, I'm going to go in because I mean, it's been going up and down like 20-30% every time, and every time after it went down, it went up again. So I kind of was like a bit annoyed just seeing all these people making all this money, and I was just like, fuck it, you know, I'm gonna be a part of it. And when I went in, it just continued going down, and the altcoins kind of went really bad.
Yeah, okay.
But at the same time, learned a lesson, and I taught all the other Bitcoin holders a lesson.
Yeah. And then you said earlier that we kind of had a little bit of a downfall after that, after the documentary came out, in terms of putting too much money into, or staking too much money on American sports.
Yeah.
Why did you choose to do that?
I think it was just the kind of degenerate side of me. I'd never had a losing season, or still don't have a losing season on NFL. This season, however, I would need to stake big on the Super Bowl winners in order to break even. So,
who have you got, mate?
I haven't really decided yet. It's because, you know, for some, what's interesting about NFL is like, you can have some people fancy one side and some other successful people fancy the other side. So it's hard to really know. It's so much variance because a team gets like 7-8 drives on average. And when you score, turnover, all of these things, it's really hard to define if you're winning better from a season.
Mm.
Like, from what I'm being told, like, some of the sharpest bettors have like losing seasons in NFL because there's so few games compared to like baseball season, basketball season, soccer season. So I mean, the only thing I was betting 49ers to win Super Bowl the two previous seasons. This season I didn't put up any outrights. But of course, they're not going to win this season. They're going to lose against KC in the final.
Okay. So
we'll see. We'll see. But Kansas could be looking good again, like we spoke about earlier. I don't know in which way this will be released, however, though. I said, like, if I really like a price, I think it's value on the other side. And I really like the 49ers. I think they should be favorites against KC. I think offensively, they're almost as good. Defensively, they're much stronger. And defenses win Super Bowl.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, you're going to go for the value.
Well, let's see. Let's see. Depends on the size of the bet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you were saying earlier when we did the podcast that you're happy to bet against your own team, Newcastle.
Well, my team in NFL is Eagles.
Oh, okay.
So
bet against them too.
I have been, but I really fancy them this season though. So I've been betting them more often than not.
Yeah.
Not gonna be going too well.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. All right. So, what was the the rebuilding process like after? You know, you're probably still like been relatively successful from sports betting since the documentary came out. But like, what was the what's been the process like of getting yourself back up to the standards that you probably want to go by?
Well, I mean, I'm still staking very decent at the games, like 5 figures on every game. So it's not like I'm retired here either.
No,
but it's been more, it's been less volume, and like recently done trying to stay away from the spots that I don't know is plus EV. I need to kind of be sure before I place bets.
Yeah.
So stopped daily punting, thinking I can beat the markets in and putting in the volume I was used to doing.
Mm.
So I guess the rebuilding process, like you call it, it's been more like redefining like what's value and what's not.
Yeah.
And learning from your mistakes.
Yeah. Can you give anyone an insight into what sports you find the most valuable?
Soccer.
Yeah.
Soccer has been the sports I've been doing best on by far.
Yeah, okay. Nice.
Basketball the worst.
Okay. And you have to stay up late to watch them too.
Yeah, I mean, if you if you're gonna watch basketball staying in living in Europe, you're gonna you're gonna mess up your whole next day.
Yeah.
So it's not something I would recommend people doing. And that is if you're like watching and placing trades based on the markets. Because I mean, the first kickoffs in UK is like midnight.
Yeah.
But the majority of games started at 2 o'clock. So I mean, if you go to bed at 2 o'clock, then you're still fine the next day, waking up at like 10 a.m. or whatever.
Yeah. How are you finding? Are you balancing it better now, do you think, than you were, you know, 4 years ago?
Yeah, definitely. Like by not putting in the same amount of hours and not having to monitor and do everything by myself, it's allows me to take weekends off or days off, even though like I really enjoy the sweat on Saturdays, like, and Sundays. So, but it's like, I don't need to watch all the soccer games. I don't care too much about that. I really like the American football, so I watch that. And luckily that's only four months a season, 4 months a year. So short season there, whereas soccer, like I travel away and I do things even in season now, which I didn't do much of back then.
Yeah.
So try to like satisfy their girlfriend also by spending some time with her, even though it's season and the sport's going on. And
yeah,
also spending time with friends and families is like something that I've been much better at.
Yeah. Well, mate, there's no point in having lots of money if you're not going to have fun with it and, you know, enjoy exactly. your life.
Like I when I look back at it, like the period where I did best, like I wasn't like the happiest by far.
Mm.
Like it was obviously good and relief to see things did go well, but it didn't give me a lot of happiness.
Yeah.
So I think like having a balance is important, being passionate about what you do.
Yeah.
And also having like the right mindset. Like I asked myself, what am I really working for? Am I doing this just for the money? If I do it for the money, what kind of difference would the money do to my life? If I had, let's say, 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, 5 million, what kind of different things would I do?
Yeah.
And like the conclusion I came to was kind of like, well, of course, with less financial pressure in a way, I would just invest more into real estate and just have a stable income. But that stable income, having that, like, how would my life look like?
Yeah.
I said to myself, well, I would play more golf. I would start working out more. I would be eating more healthy. But I'm asking also, I also said to myself, well, that's stupid because I can do all of these things right now. And it's important to do those things because if you don't do those things now and you don't enjoy the road there to success or whatever you want to call it, you're just going to end up miserable and you're going to end up failing in the end because nobody has that determination to keep on grinding and grinding and grinding when they're not feel happy and enjoying what they're doing for years.
Yeah.
So trying to be more balanced and focusing about like yourself and your own happiness is something that I think is number one key to success.
Yeah. What makes you happy, mate? Outside of obviously betting and spending time with your girlfriend, what makes you happy?
So I like to compete, which is why I think like this industry is really good. Like with poker, it's competition. Golfing, you can compete. Sports betting is kind of a competition. It's you against the bookmakers. So outside of that, I'm a very simple guy. Like just staying in bed, watching series, watching movies.
Yeah.
And doing these kind of things. It's like...
Yeah.
But I prefer to spend... And of course, traveling. Like everyone likes to travel. So
yeah.
Try to do a bit of traveling and see the different kind of places in the world.
Yeah. I think that's the coolest thing about having money is the ability to go and travel whenever you feel like it and not have to worry. And especially with your job, you can basically be anywhere most of the time.
That's right.
And be able to still do your job. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. But then again, like, you know, you're not going to do as good of a job if you don't have a proper setup.
Yeah.
And sometimes the Wi-Fi might not be that good. I've had a couple of incidents where some hotels where I have to go down and speak to a reception. Games is kicking off soon.
Oh, well.
Bets is just like standing and loading and loading and loading. And you're like, oh, what's happening here now?
So yeah.
A couple of those incidents that hasn't gone down too well.
Where?
I had one in Iceland in November this year. I remember Dominican Republic. That was 2 years ago.
Mm.
So yeah.
crazy. Can you tell us like some of the things that you've been up to since the documentary came out?
Yeah. So I've been traveling. I've been playing some live poker. Like when I was in Dominican Republic there, I managed to get third in a poker tournament. So I won like $450,000 there.
Okay.
Dollars. And I've been spending a time with online poker. Now I kind of live with some other poker players to, because for a period of time, I really wanted to challenge myself in poker up until 2020. Now I just decided like, look, I need to take a break from poker. I need to focus on the projects I got going because at least with me, if I have many things going at the same time, I can't let go of them. I still think about them.
Mm.
And when you think about other things and you're also trying to play poker, it's just so disturbing for your mind.
Yeah.
And you're not playing well. And at least it wasn't really working out for me. I realized in December I was not happy with the way I was playing. And I just decided, okay, finish all the other things that needs to be sorted. And then you can go back to poker if that's what I feel like afterwards.
Okay. So what about sports betting? What have you been doing during this time?
So
as much as you can say.
No, it's with sports betting now, I'm just basically taking a little break from it because of the robot thing. I need to analyze all of this, what's been going on. I've been working on a B2B project, like business to business, with creating my own sportsbook. Basically, softwares that you can provide to sports books, because as we all know, they're not doing a very good job at setting the right prices. Their philosophy of just kicking out whoever wins, I think it's a completely wrong approach you should have.
Yep.
If you're a sports book and you have a winning player, take that information to you and do something about it. But anyways, I'm not here I can charge a lot of money to SBTech and Kambi for telling them how they should run their sports book.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to help them on their bottom line. I'm going to let them run it the way they want to do it. And then I'm going to come with some competition and we'll see if they still think they can be the number one and two in the B2B business.
Yeah. Okay. And can you talk us a bit through what you mean by the robot?
It's basically just been automizing whatever I think is plus EV and placing it and seeing how far we can push the margins, like how price sensitive we can be, and just running all of this through a simulation. And yeah.
And you're going through the process of reviewing everything you've got from that?
So just because whenever I lose, I feel like I want to make sure that it's working. And you know, when we were winning, was it just run good, or was it actually did it actually work? And same with losing. And when it's been like a long break even stretch, like basically 2019 was break even, 2018 was $1 million. So I'm just saying, like, in a way it doesn't make sense. So the way we track EV is the same kind of way like we do a trade mount. We just use the closing line of Pinnacle. And the EV for both years was about 400K. But then running 600K over EV over huge sample and then running 400-500K over huge sample just shows, like, is this really the variance involved? Or have I done something right, something wrong? I know maybe it was a bit too aggressive with the staking on some sports that hasn't proven like a very good profit.
Yeah.
So a lot of simple things that can be adjusted, but there's also some things that I should probably look into further. And then another chapter also, which takes a lot of focus, or needs to take a lot of focus with new markets that we haven't entered yet that has big potential.
Okay, nice. So, and you mentioned TradeMate. Like, how much, I mean, I assume you don't use TradeMate, but like, how much of like the groundings of what the software is based on do you use in your strategy?
So, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for TradeMate. That's like how I started all of this and started getting the interest in betting and understood how easy it was to make money with sportsbook. Of course, they're gonna limit you after they see like, oh, he actually knows how easy we are to exploit, instead of just doing something about their software and making it more competitive. So today, I wouldn't say I use TradeMate a lot, and the fundamentals are a bit different because I just don't have access to those markets. If I had access to those markets, I would much rather be doing TradeMate betting than what I'm doing, because it's much higher margins.
Yeah.
But, and it's so much easier to build up something from there. But the way it is, it's not reality. And going around trying to find people that can place bets for me or doing stuff like that. Yeah. First of all, like, it's a high risk that they will find out and they will confiscate your funds. And the turnover I can get from those accounts anyways is a lot lower than what I'm getting. So even though the return is higher, I still want to place a bit more. And I think my bottom line is higher doing the other things.
Yeah, okay.
But then again, it depends. Like, if you're Warren Buffett, like, he might see a company that he can invest 20 million in, and he's expected to make 40% a year. But how much is that when you're investing, like, I don't know, how much is like his company is worth now? Like, I think his venture capital is like 165 billion or something.
Yeah.
So he needs to have bigger companies in order to really fill his assets.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same in like a micro scale.
Yeah, okay.
What I'm doing, like, my issue here.
Yeah.
So it's first of all the stress getting accounts, doing all these things, and it's also not really legal. So you risk also the fact of losing the accounts. That's why I just like stay away from it and rather focus on the Asian markets for now. Like, they're also making changes. So with SBO kind of going from being an Asian bookmaker to being more of a selective Asian bookmaker.
Yeah.
So it reduces the playing field, and but still, I think it's still money to be made there.
So yeah, it's not like you're not using TradeMate because it's a, you know, it's not a good enough software for you. It's more so because you're limited.
Yeah. And like I said, if I had an account, if Unibet bets on whoever operates there would allow me to bet with them, bring it. I'll go back and I'll show them a lesson. I'll teach them a lesson.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they're not willing to do
but
so.
But you can obviously still bet with the sharp bookies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even though got half limits on some of those also.
Okay. But, so I mean, they limit winning players.
Yeah. Well, Pinnacle, they do. Like, not limit, but they can give some accounts higher limits and some accounts lower limits.
Okay.
And I guess it's the same with all of the other Asians also. I mean, when you look at it, like, everyone's here to make money. And they understand, like, that makes more money from certain people than others.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Just gotta accept the reality.
Yeah. So how do you, nowadays, like, how do you go about finding value?
Like, that is something that I'm not too keen on discussing.
I had to ask, but everyone wants to find value.
So. Yeah, of course.
All right. Well, tell us about your some of your stock market investments.
Okay.
All of them.
I have a simple strategy or two strategies. One is just I use a site called Dataroma. Dataroma.
Yep.
Dataroma.com. There you can see like the list of all the biggest hedge fund, or I don't know if all the biggest hedge fund, but like a lot of big hedge funds, they release their portfolio at the end of each quarter.
Mm.
So you have like Warren Buffett, David Tepper, and many, many others. So it's interesting to see like what are they increasing their portfolio in, what are they decreasing it in. So I usually just see if I can see anything interesting there, put in some money, and hope for the best. And then my other strategy is like if I really like something, or if I use something and I think other people is also can use the other things, or it's like it's something that makes other lives better, it's usually like gonna go also good for the company. And of course, the earlier you get in, the better your return is gonna be.
Yeah.
Like Netflix, was that the best stock of the decade? I think that might have been the best stock of the decade from 2010 to 2020.
Okay.
Like Netflix has been going well, Apple very well. Like, and that's something I don't understand and I can't get my head around. Like Apple was already, or pretty close, if not they weren't. I think they were the most valued stock. If you go back like a year or something, I remember because I was on holiday and I just invested in more Apple stocks and they were at like 170. Mm. And now they're like doubled in price since November 18. So just over a year and they already doubled in price. Like how can already the biggest company in the world double their value in 1 year? What have they really released except from, this is an iPhone 10. So like they got iPhone 11. I don't know what else they really released that's like gonna increase their value by twice. And maybe it's lack of competition. That maybe, I don't know. But I just don't understand that. So for that reason now, it's kind of hard to go in and or invest more in Apple.
Mm.
It's also hard to go out because you don't know where exactly they're gonna stop.
Yeah.
And I guess that's also an issue when you follow other investors because these big guys, they sit with all the information. They know kind of what the company should be valued at. They also kind of understand where it's trending to go and when it's trending to go down. So they know where to go in and out and you just buy. And then you see, oh, fuck, they actually sold out 1 month or 2 weeks after their third quarter was released.
Yeah.
So, but you're sitting there and you're holding on and you lost 20% or something.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, that sucked.
Yeah. So results-wise, how have you gone?
Slightly profit.
Okay.
But I probably would have been better if I just followed the index.
Mm.
So,
yeah,
not a stock market expert.
No.
But fun to play around.
Can you reveal any of your bad stock mistakes?
Yeah. So there was one guy who said like there's a Norwegian company called Targovax. They're apparently doing something with curing cancer. He told me like, yeah, it's really good. It has huge potential. So I invested at when it was like 30 kroner. So like £3 a stock.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, this can go like 10, 20, 100 times the stock if they're successful. So I'm like, oh, cool. High risk, like high reward. Because he said like they had like 11 cases of basically incurable cancer and they did it their way where nobody else wanted to even try or do anything with them. And 6 of them got cured.
Okay.
They were basically given like a month or two to live. And after doing this, they've been living for 4 years.
Okay.
So I'm like, oh, awesome, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, so I stuck in some money there and 3 weeks later, they were down to like 8 kroner, so I lost 75%. And I was just like, nah, let's just get out of it.
Yeah, okay.
And I realized also, you're faced with so many investment opportunities. Like when people know you have money and you're also willing to invest, people are going to present you with different options all the time.
Mm.
And it's usually not too smart to follow those.
Yeah. How do you pick and choose nowadays?
I try to stay away from it. Just go with whatever I know that's safe, or
go with what you know,
or put in very small if I'm investing anything.
Yeah,
because my return so far is pretty close to minus 100% on the other investments I made.
Yeah,
so those it's a lesson learned.
Yeah definitely. I mean,
stick to what you know best, and if you do that, it's gonna be fine.
Yeah,
and don't believe in miracles, because they don't happen too often.
No, definitely. So can you talk us through it all, or give us a little bit of what you're doing right here, right now?
I'm sitting here talking to you.
That's the smart answer.
I don't want to talk too much about its products, because first of all, I don't want too much competition before I establish myself.
Yeah.
And we'll see about how that goes. The B2B sports betting business, it can be huge. The only issue is, like, the sport betting industry, as we're a Swedish company, it's gone down so much. Like the Betsson Group, Gig, the Norwegian Swedish listed company.
Yeah.
Everyone has just had a really, really rough couple of years now. So for that reason, it's like, it's not the best industry to be involved in right now with all the new regulations. Like, Marius told me earlier about how hard it is to get in money as a Norwegian into betting sites, and how, like, I know, like, the value of a Norwegian customer to bookmaker is huge. I can imagine how much it is now due to how hard it is to get in money. It's like probably fallen a lot also.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
So it's hard to know, really. So but like, what I also like do a lot of these days, like I stake some poker players, and I mean, I've been doing that since I started, pretty much. But some of them now have become really successful and competing at like 1500 PLO, and they're doing well. They're become really, really good.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit? Obviously, we know your living situation at the moment, but it's pretty, I'd say it's pretty unique and pretty cool. Your setup you've got here, and like who you're living with, and yeah, like kind of like a day-to-day running of what goes on in this house.
Yeah. So I was asking myself, like, what do I want to do? Like, for the, this was like 1.5 years ago or something, or just over, and we were already, the three of us were already living in London, but I was living with a guy called Espen Solos, and there was another guy called Benjamin Borilan, who was at the time, like now he's 21, yeah, he moved to London when he was 18, and like, he's just been studying and working so hard in order now to become one of the best PLO players.
Yeah.
And living together with those two, and Preben Stokkan, who is probably one of the best tournament players in the world, you're just always in a position that you can discuss poker spots. You're able to learn so much from each other. Maybe not only about poker, but mindset, work ethic, all these other tiny things that you might not think about yourself. Mm. And of course, I think most people that's able to establish themselves high in the poker, how can I say that? Establish themselves in high stakes poker.
Yeah.
Most of them are really smart people, especially in this day where it's so tough.
Yeah.
So it's fun to play some ball with them and see what they think about certain thing, and, you know, learn a bit from them and hopefully teach them some things also.
Yeah, is it, I mean, we talked about it earlier in terms of finding like a work-life balance. Is it like nice to have, I mean, I assume they're quite friendly towards it, like you're all quite friendly towards each other and you get on. Is it easy to find that balance between work and having fun?
Yeah, I would say so.
But then you might get to the point where there's like competition and you're like driving each other so much that maybe you're working too hard.
No, I wouldn't say that. Like, everyone is kind of self-driven and do things their own way.
Mm.
Like, if you lose track a bit, like, other people are there to kind of help you get back. And no, for me, it's working out really well, and I'm really happy with this.
Yeah. How long have you been in this house for?
1.5 years.
Okay. Nice.
So here we have, it's quite unique to find like a place like this in London. yeah. with like cinema, gym, sauna, multiple guest bedrooms, and it's just so much space, so you don't actually feel like you're living with all these people. But if you want to be social, there's room to be social also. So I like that balance.
And how old are you now?
29. Last year in the 20s. And turned 29 a couple of weeks ago.
How does your girlfriend and even yourself, like, how do you find living with four other men at this part of your life?
Well, you kind of see it as a investment in a way. And first of all, like, investments in terms of being able to play poker and discuss and do all these things. But if I'm not planning to play that much poker going forward, I can see her point being like, look, let's get a place, just the two of us, and be adults. And I said to her, sure, this will be my last year. And
okay,
then it's time to move on.
Time to move on.
Yeah.
Kids on the way?
No, not that I know of. She's still quite slim, so I don't think so. But...
Nice. So you reckon you'll stay in London?
Probably not. Like, it's hard to say though. But there's other options also. So we just gotta figure out when the time's right. Like, maybe we take another year in London. Maybe we'll like partly live here and partly travel. It's just really hard to say. Depends on like how everything is going, how much work is needed for me, how much work can other people do, and how much can I trust the other people also, right?
So trying
to find that right balance again and do things at the right time. I gotta give her credit, she is patient. Props to her.
Considering when we got here this morning, you'd only just woken up and it was 10 or 11 o'clock.
you called me when you were outside. I was sleeping. I was deep in.
I assume she wouldn't like the late mornings, the early mornings.
Yeah, it works out fine though. If I do the work when she's at, like, if I wake up at 12 or 1 and I work until 6 or 7 when she gets back, I'll take a break until 11. And when she's asleep, I go down and continue work. Kind of works out both ways. But it's all about then just finding out what actually works for both of you.
Yeah, exactly. Got to talk, mate.
Yeah.
No, I want to ask more about this B2B business you're talking about. Can you go into a bit more detail about kind of what you're trying to do there?
Well, I'm trying to... So basically how it works, if you run a B2B business or if you look into any bookmaker today, I think they're paying between 11 to 20% of their profits to their provider, because there's only a few that does everything themselves.
Yeah.
And that would be Bet365. Is there anyone else? And the Asian bookies.
Yeah.
But the Asian bookies don't really do anything, because they just let the bettors place the bets and they adjust the price based on that. So Bet365, they're making it work somehow. They're just showing growth and crushing it.
So
they must be doing something really good.
If
you try to think, what are they doing different to others? I think they have live streaming for pretty much everything. So I don't know how much they're paying for that. Probably a lot. But it also drives the traffic. It means that users don't have to leave their site. And they can just stay on Bet365, watch the game, place bets simultaneously. It's very interactive. I don't have the breakdowns like how much of their bets which is comes from in-play, but I reckon quite a lot. And I don't know. They're crushing it.
Yeah. So what are you trying to do with the other businesses?
So what you want to know though is you're trying to get information by like knowing what are the markets doing wrong. So let's say you're an expert on betting on Norwegian football. All right, if you want to place a bet with me, that's fine. I'll take any position and I'll take that information, knowing that you make 10% on average. All right, if you're able to place 2K with me, or 2,000 or 5,000 pounds, and I'm able to bet 20,000 pounds elsewhere, works out pretty good for all of us. Then I can also skew the price, so I look more attractive to Arbors or whatever out there, and I can get in a much bigger position than the 5K you're able to get on. Yeah, so in the end, it works out good for you. It works out good for me as a company.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And so how do you kind of facilitate that?
So that would be to build everything up from the platform to providing the odds. But it's a long way to go, so we'll see.
So, mate, if you were a bookmaker then,
mm-hmm.
what would your rules be? Or what would you change about what they're doing now?
In my life, like, I've always been big on things needs to be fair.
Yeah.
And if you look at the way everyone is advertising and the way they're acting, it's not fair.
No.
I think now it's more common for people to know, like, actually that people are getting limited if they are good at betting.
Mm.
And, like, I would not limit anyone. Of course, like, other people, yes, there are certain... Based on the way your book looks, you will allow bigger bets. And if you're pricing up something you think is reasonably fair, you think you have 1% margin, 4% margin, and 10% margin, you're kind of trying to fill up that 10% margin.
Mm.
But that price would still look appealing compared to the market. Because you don't want to give away where you think the value is as a book. Yeah. And you need to price yourself depending on how the other books are pricing themselves to not give that away. Yeah. So what I would do is just more have it more fair to people and not limit people. And of course, trying to bank as much as possible based on what my books are based on what my position is supposed to look like.
Yeah. Because it just, it doesn't really, I mean, it obviously makes sense if you're a business, but it's just incredibly unfair, isn't it? That you can limit people who are doing really well, but for people who are doing really bad, who it's basically a disease.
Yeah, I think as a sports book, it should be a kind of like, if they have accepted bets from me that is $5,000 on average, if they were to limit me, they should only be allowed to put me down to half a size or something like that.
Yeah.
So as a bookmaker, they should make a decision when they start, like, okay, whatever we allow to give you, we will also continue to give you. If they want, after I place a trade, just adjust the price, adjust the books. Now you know my position, use it to your advantage.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's crazy. Like the other day I signed up with Unibet for the first time and I traded for one day with them.
Mm-hmm.
Probably like 20, 30 trades.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a profit of $50, a massive $50. Sunday, I go into my account and they're like doing probably like a quarter of my, what, say I wanted to stake $50. They're only allowing me like 10, 20 US dollars. It's like, I made $50 off you guys in one day.
They're like, I don't know, the size of Unibet is, they're pretty big.
Exactly.
And they're willing to give away, oh, how much was the thing with the chess in Norway? Like £5 million or something they were giving away to chess? And they're letting you bet $10.
Yeah, I know.
Like, how can you call yourself a bookmaker and operate like that?
Yeah. And I've had way better experiences with the Scandinavian bookmakers, to be honest, in terms of limiting, like the likes of Coolbet, Betsson. I've been way more successful with them, and they still.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason for that? Unibet's based in the UK.
Unibet is Swedish, I think, or owned by Swedish people.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know, like. They also seem to be doing quite well, so maybe that's the reason. They're just greedy.
Yeah.
But like cherry picking customers, like if you want to bet $50, they should come back and say, okay, sorry, we priced this wrong, and reprice it and say, do you still want to place a trade based on this price? But then they can't just deduct the price you want to bet on. They would have to increase the other sides as well.
Mm.
And if you see they're always decreasing whatever side you want to bet on, all right, hit them with the first that you bet on the away team when you want to bet on the home team, and then you change when they offer you a new price.
Yeah.
So it needs to be fair.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Do you have a record limiting time?
I don't have a record, or not that I can remember. That's like, because it's so long ago since I did this.
Yeah.
So no, nothing that comes to mind, but I mean, it doesn't get much faster than one day, does it?
Yeah, I mean, my stakes was only... It was only my stakes that have been limited. I was just like, I just couldn't believe it.
And that is the end of our podcast with Jonas. Look out in the coming days for the release of episode 2 of the Aussie podcast, where Jason and I will preview the upcoming season of the NRL. And of course, Marius and I will be back on Monday with an all-new TradeMate Sports podcast, where we talk all things Arsenal, Liverpool, the Premier League, and the Champions League too. So thanks for listening, everyone. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast, whether that be on Spotify, Apple, SoundCloud, wherever you listen to your podcast. You can follow us or subscribe to us on Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook by searching TradeMate Sports or Odds Hero. See you guys soon.